Hello and welcome to Python Bytes, where we deliver Python news and headlines directly to your earbuds. This is episode 373, recorded March 5th, 2024. And I'm Brian Akin.
And I'm Michael Kennedy.
And you're just back from, where were you last week?
I was in the Philippines, hanging out in warm weather, and meeting some new people, experiencing new places. Nice. It was excellent. Yeah.
Nice to have you back.
Yeah, thanks. Good to be back.
This episode is sponsored by Scout APM. We'll hear more about them later. If you want to connect with us or the show, we're on Fostodon. You can go to @mkennedy, @BrianAkin, or @PythonBytes, @fostodon.org. And if you're listening to us later, you can join us live if you want. Go to pythonbytes.fm/live and join the audience there. Michael, what do you got for us first?
Well, I have some super fun stuff. This one is not purely a Python thing, but it sure is helpful for Python developers. Brian, would you say that you use the terminal fair amount?
Yes.
In your world?
Yes.
As do I. And like navigating the terminal is always a bit of a hassle. I'm like, Michael, did you really need to have it that deep of a directory tree folder structure for this thing? Because you're CD in this, CD in that. Like, did you need to name them the same? So like tab complete doesn't really help you as much as you would want, and so on. So I want to tell you about Zoxide. So Zoxide is like CD, you know, the command, one of the very first things you learn when you learn about terminals, command prompts, and so on. But it's way better. The Oxide is because it's written in Rust, so that probably means it has VC funding or something. Nah, just kidding. But but it is backed by Warp, which I've talked about before, which is also written in Rust, and I believe does. Anyway, the idea is that there's a little graphical animation. So the idea is once you install it into your terminal, and whatever terminal you're using, it pretty much supports that.
Okay.
Once you install it, it will start to remember all of your directory changes, at least if you use it. And I'll tell you more about that in a second. But if you use it to move around, like imagine you've got a directory. The example they're using on the screen here is something like, some long path /foo, you know, some /long/path/foo, right? Like a big directory structure. You could just say cd foo and it'll just take you into that structure. Cause it's like, all right, well, if the only directory structure I've ever seen that you actually cared to go into that involves the word foo is this one. Cool. You could say cd long and it would take you just /long. Hmm. Once there's more than one, there's like a conflict. Then you can do a couple of things. You can hit space and then tab, and it'll pull up like a little autocomplete. Or you can, instead of like the hotkey they show or the command they show is Z, you could, Z for some of our folks, you could type ZI for interactive, and it'll show you like a fuzzy completion search deal of all the history you've ever had. So you can go into kind of an interactive way to go and find the files or the paths that you've look for before. So isn't that cool?
It is cool. I definitely need to check this out.
Yeah, I've been using it for a few days and I really like it. So a lot of what you know about CD is the same as Z. So you can say Z dot dot. You can say Z minus to go to the previous directory, not necessarily up one, but just wherever you were before. Like I said, you do the ZI for the interactive or type a little bit and just space tab to pull up autocomplete. And you can get it in a bunch of ways. Like, look at all these platforms. Linux, macOS, Windows, BSD, even Android. And on Mac, you can do a bunch of ways. You can conda forge it. You can ASDF it. You can homebrew it. All those. And then look at all the different shells here.
Wow. Yeah.
Even Conch, the Python-based one. But it's got the Z shell, which is what I'm doing these days. And then if you want that interactive version, you need to install FZF, which is a command line fuzzy finder thing that you can do. And then the thing that's interesting is, like, when I did this, there's no way I'm going to remember to type Z. I'm just going to type CD. And then after a while, I'll be like, oh, I should have used Z, but it won't be in the history. So let me just swap it out for Z, for CD, you know, swap those. And so what you can do when you install it, does it say on here? Maybe it does. Oh, it's up under the configuration. So in the shell configuration bit, you have to do this eval zoxide init zsh. Okay. But then you can also say --- command cmd is some other character if you don't want to use z. And if you say command is cd, then just cd becomes this thing instead. And of course, if you don't like it, right, you just comment it out and it goes away.
Okay.
That's what I did.
That ends up showing up in your one of your dot files or something, and then you can
I put it in my ZSHRC dot file for me and just put that at the bottom. You know, if I ever decide, you know what, I just want my CD back, I could take that part out, or if I don't like this, I just comment that thing out. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I don't know if I want to type Z because that's with my pinky, whereas CD's with my middle finger. I'll probably map it to something else like E or C or something.
Yeah,
or just CD. Why not?
So. Yeah, I switch it to CD. And then if you want to do the interactive, you do CDI. But yeah. I think this is cool. It's not going to change your life, but it's also...
Little extra things that make your life a little faster. It's good. So
I find it really interesting that on both Windows and Mac, Linux to some degree, but Windows and Mac even more, especially Mac, like you open up the default terminal experience and it is bad, bad. It's like they want you to stay out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it opens up, it's white background, which I don't know, for some reason, terminals, it just seems wrong for that. But then also it's like the wrong font. The fonts are incredibly small. There's not hardly anything installed to help you, right? It's just so many levels of, you can add on these little tools that just make it so much nicer. So anyway, I'm a big fan of this.
Before we move on, one question from the chat does it remember directories across terminal sessions?
It does remember across terminal sessions. I think it must keep a little hidden folder file or something like that. I didn't pay attention, but yeah, it's just, you need to have interacted with it. I'm pretty sure it does it across sessions though.
Okay, cool. Definitely check it out.
Yeah.
Speaking of command line interfaces, I'd like to talk about building them. So, there's an article called from Raul Pai, I think, Smart CLIs with Typer. And I was like just excited to see this because I love Typer, and I've been using both Typer and argparse a lot, actually. I guess for me, I use Typer if I'm already importing other stuff, but if it's a package or a project that doesn't have any external dependencies, then I'll try to use argparse because I don't want to pull in a external dependency just for Typer sort of thing. However, Typer is really fun. This is a cool article, and what I was surprised by was there was a whole bunch of stuff I learned in this. Even though I've been using it for years, there's some great things that I didn't know about. So there's a great article, check it out. But first thing I want to say is, like, right off the bat, it just talks about sort of a comparison between an argparse version and a Typer version. It's not hugely different, but it just... talks about how Typer, you don't have to like declare your arguments. You just have a function. You can just have it discover it. You can just have a function like main, and Typer figures out that all of your type hinted arguments to that function are now arguments to your script, which is cool. I want to hop to the things that I knew about and forgot, or just never knew about, like how easy it is to do help. Help is actually a little easier in argparse, but it's not that bad in Typer. You have to do a Typer annotated thing with argument with help on it. It's a little clunkier. It's not that bad, but it's a lot different than if you don't want help, you just have to, it's a little bit more work. Anyway, prompting for input. I did not know you could do this. So if you have like you would add help, you add a prompt. Instead, if it's left out, what happens is Typer will prompt the user for it. So like in the example, it gives a name and an age for this little example script. If you forgot to put an age, it'll pop up and say, how old are you? That's pretty cool that you can add a prompt. That's
really cool. Yeah, I really like that, actually.
I'm definitely going to have to try this because there's a lot of times where it's good to have like some defaults, but also, speaking of defaults, you can also add an environmental variable so that if the default doesn't have to be hard coded, but it could be an environmental variable that you set. And then, if you didn't add the argument, it'll pull it from an environmental variable. So very cool there. What else? It talks about explicit apps versus, is it kind of a different way to do it and, there's a couple ways to do our Typer, and explicit app one is one of the ways. One of the neat things you get with that is multiple commands. And so there's an example of doing multiple commands. I love that feature of Typer. And then as a comparison, a similar sort of a thing with argparse would have been subcommands. So kind of a fun article. And then I kind of got lost in the whole reusable command thing. But yeah.
Yeah, anyway. This looks great. Yeah, I didn't know about the input one or the environment variable one. These are both awesome.
Yeah. Cool yeah. things if you're making your own command line interfaces. And I also appreciated the shout out to argparse, not like because that is the other one like most people should consider, either Typer or argparse, I think. So
mm-hmm. for sure. Andrew out there says that yes, ZOxide does have a persistent database, as I thought. And also asks whether Typer supports the union operator, the pipe operator for types. Not sure. He said it didn't used to. I'm not sure if it does.
I don't know.
I think you could run into issues. Like if you said this is pipe int or pipe date time, like it could try to parse as a date time, but then see the number as like a timestamp. I can see how it can be tricky. So maybe it's by design.
I'm guessing not yet, but I guess just maybe based on the last time I tried it, because one of the things is optional. So if one of the things I love about the bar for types is to be able to say int or none as an optional thing, but that's not how you do it with Typer. With Typer, you have to say option, like at least last time I tried it, you had to say optional int equals none. But actually this is even, yeah, optional makes it so that's like int or none. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, cool.
Anyway, cool.
Awesome. Awesome.
What else is awesome, Michael?
Our sponsor is awesome. Let's take a moment and thank them and tell you about them, and then I'll get back to it. Let me tell you real quick about Scout APM. They're big supporters of Python Bytes, so we appreciate that very much. So if you are tired of spending hours trying to find the root cause of issues impacting your performance, then you owe it to yourself to check out Scout APM. They're a leading Python application performance monitoring tool, APM, that helps you identify and solve performance abnormalities faster and easier. Scout APM ties bottlenecks such as memory leaks, slow database queries, background jobs, and the dreaded N+1 queries that you can end up if you do lazy loading in your ORM, and then you say, oh no, why is it so slow? Why are you doing 200 database queries for what should be one? So you can find out things like that. And it links it back directly to source code so you can spend less time in the debugger and tailing logs and just finding the problems and moving on. And you'll love it because it's built for developers by developers. It makes it easy to get set up. Seriously, you can do it in less than 4 minutes. So that's awesome. And the best part is the pricing is straightforward. You only pay for the data that you use with no hidden overage fees or per seat pricing. And I just learned this, Brian. They provide the pro version for free to all open source projects. So if you're an open source maintainer and you want to have Scout APM for that project, just shoot them a message or something on their pricing page about that. So you can start your free trial and get instant insights today. Visit pythonbytes.fm/scout. The link is in your podcast player show notes as well. And please use that link. Don't just search for them, because otherwise they don't think you came from us. And then they'd stop supporting the show. So please use our link, pythonbytes.fm/scout. Check them out. It really supports the show. Awesome. Awesome. Brian, have you looked into like buffer overflows and how all that kind of bad stuff happens? It's the first time I learned about it. It was just fascinating about how you could abuse computers.
yeah. Well, I'm in C++, so a lot of the time. Oh, yeah.
So you basically create buffer overflow.
Yeah.
Stuff, like commonly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in C++ got not just the printf, but like the safe printfs and other things. Like there was additional like checking ones to help prevent that, right? But our very own NSA, who knows something about buffer overflows, I suppose, recommended something pretty interesting. It says, this was actually a shout out to Samuel Colvin, who put this on Twitter. I don't know. I think Twitter needs to decide what it is. Is it X or is it Twitter? I mean, I know they use the word X and the symbol X, but what's the domain? It's not X.com. It's Twitter.com. Come on. So what are you? All right. Back to the topic.
Exeter.
I think X Twitter is the best we can do. Anyway, he pointed out something with some interesting commentary here, said the U.S. government, specifically the NSA, looking to say, hey, maybe we should have it harder to break into our systems. The government explicitly recommends 6 memory safe languages.
Okay.
And then he also creates a bit of a juxtaposition here. C# created by Microsoft And there's usually like one or two people behind this, right? For example, the C# was Anders Hallsberg, who also did TypeScript. Go, created by Google. Java, created by Sun, bought by Oracle. Rust, created Borm by Mozilla. Swift by Apple. And Python, created by one genius on his own Christmas holiday.
Yeah.
Said Python is an extraordinary demonstration of the impact one person and the group that they build can have on the world, which I think brings together two interesting ideas here, right? Like that Python is officially one of the memory safe languages recommended that we should be using by the NSA. And then just the effect that Guido has had.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty wild.
I think it's interesting that I didn't really realize that Rust was memory safe, but.
Yeah, that's interesting too, isn't it? It's. I think that's part of its magic, right? How it's yeah. kind of a low-level systems language, but is way more memory safe as well with its ownership and all that. But and then, oh my gosh, this really took off. It must be why I saw it. 781,000 views. But then, if you look at the comments, the comments. I can't see it because I'm not logged in, but there are many comments, and the commentary is varied and interesting down there. Let me just tell you. But yeah, I think this is interesting. Like just one more reason to use Python or, you know, other memory safe languages as well. But you know, for example, in the comments, people pointing out, well, Rust was created by one person while they were at Mozilla. But I think it's maybe a little bit different to say, you know, you were funded by this big tech company to create this thing and, you know, you did it.
Whereas, I don't think Samuel's intending to diss all the other languages.
He was more props to Guido. Yeah. But yeah. If you look at all the comments, it does what you would expect a post like this to do as people like get their, you know, their baby not quite loved. Highly notable in its absence is JavaScript here.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yep. All right. Yeah. Well, we'll leave it there. People can check it out, but that's.
I haven't looked at the recommendation, the NSA recommendation either. So. We'll have to check that out as well.
Yeah, they NSA says use Python.
Use Python. Yes, I mean, you know, and we all listen to the NSA. In this case too, though. Yeah.
I thought it was the other way around. Didn't the NSA listen to us? No, I don't.
Yeah. Oh yeah, right. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the command line world for a moment and talk about textual. So we've talked about textual before. Will McGugan's child. So with came from Rich, then Textual. But Textual's over at textual.textualize.io. So that's a great place to look for demonstrations and stuff. So if you go there, there's some cool demos of what other people are doing with it and some other projects. These are great. Wow, the Dolphy looks cool. Anyway, so what I wanted to cover was that it does have its own tutorials. So if you go to the main page, you can go on tutorials, and there's a great tutorial for how to use it. There's a little timer tutorial. It's nice. But maybe the way that they're teaching there just doesn't fit you. So I was really glad to see that Mike Driscoll over at Mouse versus Python has some textual tutorials that he's started. And what caught my attention was the creating a modal dialogue for your TUIs with in textual. But he's got like four different blog posts around tutorials around textual right now. So Mike's done some great work teaching people before, so wanted to shout out to Mike for this. The modal dialogue's kind of fun. Goes through a little fairly simple example, but the code's really just not complicated to follow along with. So really kind of fun talking about how to do a modal dialogue, because that's something.
Are you sure you want to quit? I love it.
Are you sure you want to quit? But there's other things like, are you sure you want to delete your entire repository? Sort of thing. And then
we recommend a where clause in your delete statement against the database.
Yeah. So anyway, good job, Mike, for jumping on this and helping to teach textual. So cool.
Yeah, that looks really cool. Textual is very, very interesting. So cool.
So, all right. Well, those are our topics. Do you have any extras for us?
I have just a couple of extras I'd like to go through here. So one, you know, ngrok, we've talked about ngrok before. If you need to let people access services, typically HTTP, but it could honestly be anything on your system, you can run ngrok. It's super cool. I use it, pay for it. You know, so if, like I'm working on a web app and I want somebody to be able to actually interact with it, but I'm behind a firewall somewhere else. You can just run in Grok, get an SSL backed URL. That's kind of some random thing that people can go to. So that's the CLI and all that. But they've released a little while ago, in December, they released a ngrok Python SDK. So if you want to write apps that basically temporarily spin up ways for people to get into systems, like maybe you're on a Raspberry Pi or you're on some IoT thing and it's locked away somewhere, but you need for it to be able to people to get to it under certain circumstances or whatever, right? Then here you go. Write some code and you plug into all that infrastructure. It's pretty cool.
That is pretty handy. Yeah.
Yep. I don't have a particular use case for it, but because I just use ngrok directly, but I'm a big fan of ngrok. And I think, you know, I'm sure there's going to be some interesting things. You can even do Unix sockets, like unix.socket thing, which is pretty wild. So gets quite advanced. All right. What else? Let's see. You brought up Django Knots a while ago. And so I recently had Sarah Boyce and Tushar Gupta from the Django Knot program on Talk Python. That was, I think, released last week. Recorded a while ago, but released last week. And so just want to give a shout out to that since we brought it up first on the show.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah. Then Sarah was very excited to hear you mention it when you brought it up. She said on the show, this show on Talk Python, she mentioned that she was excited to hear it here. So that's cool. Also, I had an interesting experience with my phone, Brian. I was looking at my phone going, I'm not sure I really like the color anymore. And I've had it for a little while. Maybe I'll get a new phone. And then I'm like, dude, what is wrong with you? No, it's an iPhone 13. So I've had it for a while, but you're just going to put a black case on it anyway. Maybe you just get a different case. And you know, it kind of doesn't hold its charge as long. So maybe just get a new battery for it. It's like, depending on the one you got, $69, $89 for a new battery, instead of like $1,000 for a new phone, $5 for a new case, $90 for a new battery, drop by the Apple store, they'll switch it. I just would encourage people like, hey, you might be able to just improve your phone, or, you know, give it a different color without going over the top.
Yeah. What do I got? I got an 8 Plus that I'm using. It still works fine. It just changed amazing. The battery every couple of years.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems pretty trustworthy to do it at Apple, right? They use the same battery or better. They might not have the same old battery. Like, sorry, you got to get a better one. Okay. Take it.
Nice. Cool.
Anyway, that's my public service announcement for people out there. Applies to Android as well. You can get a new case for Android as well.
Okay. Well, I have a couple extras. One of them is a public service thing, but the first one is just a shout out to Hinnick's new video. We talked about UV a couple weeks ago, I think, or last week. I can't remember. And there's a video called Is UV the Future of Python Packaging? And it's like 20 minutes, 17 minutes. But it's really kind of a nice look at the background of really what's going on here. The speed ups might not seem the speed. Everything's faster is great, right? But there's more to it than that. And kind of about some of the future that they might be putting together after this is important. So interesting discussion. I encourage people to check it out. The other public service announcement that I wanted to say was, I use Venmo occasionally, mostly to send money to and from my daughter. But I didn't notice, and I don't want to show off too much, but that's Venmo, you know. But I was surprised when I looked at my old transactions and found that there's a feed feature where everybody that's connected to you or even not connected to you can see everything that you've spent money on. And I'm like, what the heck is this for?
Not just money, but like why the little message to the person and all sorts of stuff.
I don't think you can see the amount, but you see that somebody paid somebody else. And then you can click on the other person and follow their feed and follow other people. And this doesn't make sense for finances. So I would encourage everybody to go into your settings and just turn that to private. Nobody needs to see that. I don't know why there's a social feature for a money sharing app.
It's horrible.
It's just weird.
It's horrible. I ended up using Venmo as well because my kids are like, Dad, I'm going to Venmo you. How about PayPal? Venmo. I'm like, all right. But yeah, it drives me nuts that I could see people that I was even, you know, friends with like 15 years ago. I still see what they're buying and who they shared lunch with. It's just like that. It doesn't belong in this space. I just don't think so. Yeah. Turn the feed off.
Turn the feed off. And also, I don't think it shouldn't be on by default. And also, people don't know about it. So other people, you know, that use Venmo, let them know that their feed's public. So yeah. Anyway, cool. Well, that was kind of serious, but do we have something funny?
Oh, this is very serious too. No jokes. All right. So here's a developer and a project manager speaking. The developer starts out and says, I can ship this feature that you want in 4 weeks. Because listen, I need to write maintainable code. We can't just have like this tech debt piling up and all this junk, right? Like, this is a professional organization. The PM says, what if we delegate maintenance to someone else? Oh, I can release that in 3 days.
Exactly.
No tests, Brian. We don't need tests. Come on.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So optional. So optional if that's someone else's problem. Just kidding.
Well, is done when, like, when all the defects are done, or
no, just that, when that you don't report that to the other person.
The API is frozen. It's, yeah. Anyway.
Exactly. Well,
4 weeks, 3 days. I can hack that in 3 days. Yeah.
No problem. We got it. We got it covered.
Yeah. My favorite is when somebody asks like one person on the team, how long to take this? Can you get this to get it done? And like one stage says like a week. So they promise a customer a week, and there's like so many other people that need to work on it.
Yes. Oh yeah. Did you want documentation? Oh, you want that? You want that written up as well? Oh, I see.
Oh, a user interface for that also? Oh, that's going to be
nobody pointed that out. Month,
so yeah, tests or none. Yeah. Anyway,
wait, we got to close it out with a comment from Alvaro. Test pipe none. Test or none in the typing system.
Yeah,
I love it. Optional. Tests are optional.
Tests are optional. Yeah. Anyway, again, thanks for the wonderful episode, Michael. We'll talk to you next week.